You're listening to Does Not Compute. I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, SwiftType. SwiftType is site search made easy. It intelligently indexes your website and provides a great search interface so your visitors can quickly find the things they need. Don't even think twice about setting up a search server or who you're going to pay to juggle your indices. No longer. Just point SwiftType at your website and they'll handle the rest. Blazing fast search with relevant results, and you can be up and running in just minutes. Of course, SwiftType also has a developer API that allows for deep customization if you need it. Whether you're replacing Google Site Search, a custom solution, or adding search to your site for the first time, SwiftType can make the process fast and painless. It's a search revolution, folks, and you can be at the forefront. Sign up today at swifttype.com/doesnotcompute, and you'll get a 14-day trial of the best search your site has ever had. Our thanks to SwiftType for sponsoring the show, and remember to check out swifttype.com/doesnotcompute. To learn more and sign up. It's live, man. It's live. Nestnotes.com. Anybody can go and sign up, check it out, and all that. We haven't, it's been like a really quiet launch. This is, I guess, going to be the first kind of public thing that's even been said that it's live. But it's live, and I ordered prints for myself just to make sure that, you know, everything was smooth and that flow was good, and I received them, and they're what I ordered. It all works, man.
You know what's funny is that even though we've both obviously tested our payment systems on dev and staging, I actually bought an ottoman that I told them not even to just don't send it to me. I just want to test a real card with real money. So I purchased something and I was like, don't refund me. Don't send it to me. I don't care. I just needed to know that it worked.
Right. Yeah. It's funny. I feel like there's always some last minute kind of production payment bug. And I actually hit one this time. I'm really glad that I did this whole process because, I have kind of a weird setup for the Heroku pipeline for the front end. And one of my like dummy build apps actually had a test Stripe key when it was supposed to have a production Stripe key. So that would have just been there if I hadn't tested that. Always a good idea to go through and just make sure that everything is set up right. Sometimes you won't have accepted terms and conditions or something. There's just a lot of things that can go differently on production than on staging.
Yeah, that's very true. You never know what happens or what people are doing. I never know what people are even doing. Like, I made this thing, but I have no idea what people actually do with it because I don't have any clue as to how people can use their computers. I don't even know how people use their phones. I was on a boat yesterday for 8 hours observing people use their devices to take pictures and videos, and it was entertaining to say the least.
Were there any like things in particular they were doing?
Well, one lady had her phone in, I presume, this waterproof bag. And so she was taking pictures. She was like holding the bag up, taking pictures with her phone inside of a bag. Hopefully they turned out for her because it was a pretty cool trip. She never took it out of the bag.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't generally take photos through a bag, personally.
I wouldn't either. I'm trying to think of what else. I'm watching people use like how they hold their phone. A lot of people hold it with their left hand and use their finger. Like they fashion their pointer finger as if it were a stylus, and they use their phones like that, which I thought was also interesting because I never have done that. I always use my thumbs.
I use my thumbs, but I hold my phone in my left hand because I have the 7 Plus small hands.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just watching people do stuff.
So it's kind of, it'll sit like on my left pinky, I guess. And then I use my right hand almost for like the top part of the screen and my left hand for the bottom part.
Weird. And if I can't reach, I use that little double tap. Like it's not a double push on the home button. It's just a double tap on the home button.
The reachability.
Yeah, and it just shoots the top half of the screen down so you can tap something. And when you tap something, it shoots back up. I use that all the time. But there were people that just strictly use their phone with their pointer, like phone in left hand, pointer finger, like stylus, strictly.
Even for typing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my.
One finger typing.
Yeah.
I assume those people are the two finger typists as well on Peck.
Right.
But yeah, it was interesting. It was nice to get away. I've been working a lot lately. I got an alpha version of Watch Nature out. It's like a hidden secret kind of test thing for a few people. So I pushed that out and been working on Night. And obviously, you know, DK is always rolling.
So earlier this morning, you mentioned to me that, or maybe it was last night, recently, you mentioned to me that you're making the jump. You're switching Night Foundation over to Nuxt and the single page app, server rendered, well, et cetera.
Yeah. So Night Foundation currently it's a single page app, but it's not server rendered or anything. And it's worked great for a long time. You know, obviously it's much faster than it used to be when we did the relaunch. It allows me to make a ton of changes to the back end and not have to worry about breaking anything or weird deploy issues, because I'm not even having to deploy the front end when I make those changes. And that's something I want to talk about in a little bit. So I'm switching it to Nuxt, and particularly the reason for the switch is because they have just a ton of content, and they're predominantly a media organization. I mean, yeah, they're a foundation, and they you know, give out grants for research and studies and stuff. But Night Foundation itself, especially the website, it's kind of like a media publication. They're writing articles, they're putting out topics, they're, you know, putting out reports and speeches a lot. And so far, like, pre-rendering for SEO reasons has been pretty much okay. But there's just, like, every now and then there seems to be some things that pop up, like, so I'm using Node pre-render and it's running on a separate Heroku instance. And that thing, so Heroku is going to power cycle dynos like once a day, you know? Whenever that's power cycling, obviously nothing's going to unfurl. And again, that's kind of a small problem. It's just once a day, but there's so much traffic. And I mean, so they've had several million page views, or they get that every couple of months, several million. They get there's a lot of traffic there. And so that could equate to like a few people sharing something on Facebook and nothing unfurling, or people sharing stuff in Slack and nothing unfurling. And there's other cases where, just by the nature of what this thing does, I haven't really like messed with hooking it up to like a Redis store or anything like that. So every now and then the server might run out of memory. And so what happens is it stays up for so long and then just restarts itself really quick to get a fresh memory slate going. And that's just kind of been there because that's how it's set up by default. And I haven't really had the time or the resources to go through and experiment, like dumping all this time into the SSR stuff, because it works, you know, mostly okay. So I've been working a little bit on moving from Vue 1 to Vue 2 because Night was launched with Vue version 1, and it's still working fine, but there's a lot of benefits I see happening around the Nuxt community and Vue 2 as well, with it being faster and smaller. So I figured, you know, while I'm porting it to Vue 2, I might as well just move it to a Nuxt app.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, that's basically the same kind of reasoning that led me to use Nuxt, is just it just doesn't seem sustainable to operate anything that's really at scale with pre-rendering.
Yeah, and
there's just there's so much state to move back and forth, and when things get edited or changed or deleted, it's just a lot of stuff that has to be synced with another tool.
Right.
Whereas if you do it SSR, then it is an initial investment there, but then everything just kind of works as far as like trackers and crawlers would expect.
Right, yeah.
On every page, just for free. You don't have to worry about maintaining that back and forth.
Yeah, so I guess if anyone's not familiar with like how the pre-renderer works, basically the Night site, the front end, sits on top of an Express app, and pre-render node has some middleware that detects basically it does some user agent sniffing, and if it sees that it's some sort of bot, then what it does is it proxies the request to the pre-render server, which uses Phantom.js. So it'll actually fetch the data from the API and all that stuff. It'll render it and then return just HTML to the crawler. So that way the crawler can do what it normally does. And that's fine. It's just slower. it's obviously going to be much slower because it has to, the request has to be proxied, then it has to wait for the data to come back, then it has to actually render the page before it can return anything to the crawler.
Well, I mean, that's going to be the same overall flow that you're going to have with SSR, though, because it's just not, the only thing that's going to be removed really is the proxy part.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't have to go to a separate instance, yep. So there's not an extra round trip across the wire. Mm-hmm. There, it's all kind of self-contained, and also, I mean, the reason why I'm not using like Netlify or anything like that is because there's a portion of the Knight CMS called feature pages or open pages, and they're essentially complete websites in and of themselves. So, like, when someone goes to knightfoundation.org/features/opencities, I don't think Open Cities is one, but so that URL might not even work. But like, if you go to a certain feature page, instead of it returning custom HTML into like a frame or anything like that, what it does is it actually, the Express server that's sitting on it, what it does is it does the request. It knows that you're actually trying to get a feature page. It does the request and returns that HTML instead. So you don't even get the knightfoundation.org HTML. You get like an actually separate, you get an actual separate page.
Right. And so for folks who aren't familiar with this setup, the reason they've done that is they have dozens of these things. And a lot of them were built out by different like design agencies and things over the years, just for different separate projects. And so they were built out as a lot of them had their own domains and that sort of thing, but now they've all been consolidated back in. So that's kind of why there's that weird setup with the fully separate sites, because that's how they were made, as fully separate sites.
Exactly, yeah. And that was part of the migration process, was to try to like wrangle all that, because over the years it just kind of got spread out across different servers and stuff. So that's another thing that I do, I'm working on right now, is I'm going through a bunch of S3 assets and then moving different websites back into GitHub. So we have a place that they're tracked. Yeah. Which is good for Knight, you know, it's just a lot of work. But yeah, so I couldn't use Netlify or something like that because I needed to be able to run this thing on an Express server. And again, using Nux, that's going to be running on Express anyway. So for the pre-rendering stuff. So it all just fits really well. I'm not having to make any crazy changes. But really what I'm excited about is the SSR, like we talked about. I don't want to have to reinvent a bunch of wheels essentially to do this. So I think in switching to Nux, there's a lot of people in the Nux community that are working towards like PWA status, that are working towards making great mobile applications. And I think that Knight can benefit from a lot of that work. And I think that I don't have enough time to sleep and not die to do all that. So I'm going to switch over to Nux and just reap the benefits of other people's hard work.
It's kind of funny that you were talking about that migration, the S3 migration that you're working on right now, pulling everything into GitHub. I feel like we were talking about this the other day, but so much of dev work is really a lot more like surgery, especially when you're doing moving things like that to different servers or doing a big refactor. It's just like, how can I make these changes? I need to achieve this result. What are the smallest incisions I can make in this thing in order to get what I need done?
Yeah, it's always just a cost benefit analysis. How much time do I have versus how much do I need to get done? It seems to be the question that I'm always asking myself. It always comes back to time for me because I have so much stuff going on right now. But yeah, it's all about like figuring out, okay, so what can I do that will have the least amount of impact or the least amount of negative impact? Because if you're thinking of a surgery, the less invasive a surgery, the faster recovery is, and the less painful recovery is for somebody. And it's kind of like that for development, right? Like, so what's the smallest thing I can do to make this thing work, make it go up front, and then let me do that?
That's something that I can have trouble with in Git sometimes. It can be really rough to stay super focused on something in a branch. So over the last week, I did a pretty big change as to how permission stuff works in NestNotes. Previously, all of the information about whether an object was editable or what kind of permissions you had on it were just set up as Booleans and passed back from the API using my serializers. But the change I made, basically, all that same information still gets added, but I'm adding it on the client side within my Vuex mutations. So whenever I add something to, for example, my store of moments, which are like our thing items in the timeline, it loops over the permissions that you have based on what association you have to the moment that's being loaded in. So now none of that stuff is being done on the server. It drastically reduced the number of database requests we're doing for every page load, like cut it in half, basically. So it's been a huge thing, but going in there and staying focused was pretty hard. Because you get in there and you're like, okay, how can I change this? How can I move these things around so that this information is getting added here instead of here? And there's like, well, it would be nice if I made this change too. And then I made this change and then I made this change. But that's kind of a great way to end up breaking things and not knowing what broke them.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with something like permissions, you really need to look at that and say, okay, I need to cut myself off here and just, it would be really great to make these changes and I need to make them, but just put it in GitHub and do it in another branch later.
Yeah. It's kind of like defusing a bomb, right? Like if you're following a manual, because when you're working through this stuff, you kind of make a list of what you need to do. I mean, I think you should anyway, kind of think up front. So you have your little manual of what you need to do. And when you're defusing a bomb, you better go step by step and you better do it slow. You better not get ahead of yourself because the bomb will explode. Especially with permission stuff, because that's all, you know, security related. That's kind of a big deal to be making a lot of changes there. And you're right. It's really easy if you have a lot of things to do. It's really easy to start glossing over things. One thing I've been doing, because I'm kind of facing similar situations as well when I'm doing a lot of like Elixir rewriting for DK or making, you know, bug fixes for them, especially anything around having to do with money, it's kind of difficult. So what I've been doing actually since it's been like 5 days now since I've been doing this, but I've been using the Pomodoro technique. And if you're not familiar, it's basically you just set a timer for 25 minutes. And after the 25 minute timer is up, you take a 5 minute break and then you repeat. So what I've been doing is I'll set a timer for 25 minutes. I'll have my specific task in mind and I won't do anything. I won't answer any notifications. I won't answer phone calls, texts, Slacks, Twists, emails, Twitter DMs, Instagram DMs, Reddit DM. I'll answer nothing. No one gets a peep until those 25 minutes are up. And what I've been doing is towards the end of the 25 minutes, I'll try to like do a little recap. So if I have a bunch of uncommitted files, I'll start kind of making small commits or batching things into commits and kind of like trying to clean things up, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before, I'm sure, but anybody who's not using Tower, highly recommend Tower for doing that sort of thing. Makes it really easy to see what's changed in your working copy and commit like individual lines or chunks. I use that all the time because it is an easy way to go in and actually divide your commits up. If you have a problem with mega commits, which I personally do a lot of the time, it makes it really easy to break that up because then you can just be like, okay, well, this change is obviously a separate thing. I'm going to do its own commit. And then these lines are for this. And you can just break it up so much easier that way.
They just make it really easy. Because I didn't really do any of that until I started using Tower either. Because, yeah, I can look up how to do it with the docs, but it's just a whole thing. It's a whole process. Whereas with Tower, I click on a file and the lines are there. I drag across some lines and then those are staged. It's super great. Yeah, I recommend it as well. I know there's other clients that can do similar things, but Tower just seems to be the best overall experience that I've used, that I found using a GUI app for Git anyway.
It's amazing how much stuff they've packed into it. Like it really does do pretty much everything you would want to do with Git on a regular basis very easily. Like there's pretty much always a keyboard shortcut or just a quick menu item to do even pretty complex stuff, like and automatic stashing and reapplying when you switch branches and all sorts of cool things that it just handles for you that otherwise you have to do manually. I think it's such a huge time saver. I really do. And it's of course, it's still good to know the command line Git stuff, at least the basics, because you won't always have access to a GUI. But I mean, the vast majority of the time, I'm working on my own computer. So I guess this would be different maybe for people who pair. But
you know, it's funny because I was thinking about that a couple of days ago. I'm always like in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking about how can I make my setup not really be tied to one machine, because I do have a lot of things that are customized. And like Tower, like you're saying, okay, well, what if I'm pairing with somebody? I don't have access to that. Or what if I'm working from someone else's machine? What if I don't have access to this other tool? When in reality, I can't remember the last time I typed on someone else's keyboard when I was doing a work commit.
Right.
I really can't. Even when I'm pairing, that happens a lot over, I happen to do that a lot over Screen Hero. So even then, I'm still on my own stuff. So I don't know. I found myself thinking that, trying to figure out what I can purge from my setup that's non-standard. And then I was like, why am I thinking about this? I literally never do that. I'm always on my own machine.
Yeah, and I mean, pretty much the only benefit I see to that kind of non-customization is like if you want to move machines. But I mean, my answer to that is just keep a good Time Machine backup, and then you can just instantly clone over to whatever new machine and be up and running in a couple hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even, I mean, there's a lot of bash scripts that you can kind of customize as well. That'll just go through and automate everything. And, like all the different parts of the setup. It's pretty easy to get things going these days. If, for example, I dropped my laptop on the ground earlier and I was freaked out for a second and I was like, oh no, but I have all my stuff set up in a way, that makes it pretty easy just to get up and running again.
Whenever I talk about backups, I get paranoid and I have to double check that my Time Machine backups are actually running.
Yeah, I kind of do the same. I've been using, the encrypted one, Spider Oak.
Yeah.
And it's like continuously backing up my user folder, which, you know, maybe not contain everything, but it has pretty much everything I would need to move over to a new machine.
Yeah. Does Spider Oak have a service where they will like ship you out a drive, or is there just a download?
I think it's just a download. I haven't looked at it close enough. I don't think I ever asked myself that question if that was a service they offered. So I didn't really think to look for it, but I'm pretty sure it's just downloads. But what's funny is that I have two other backups in there. So I have two backups from computers that I don't own anymore, just in case there's some. Actually, it saved me. A couple of weeks ago when I was moving stuff onto this machine, I didn't have my 1Password recovery PDF.
Oh, sure.
And I was like, oh God, if I don't have that, then, you know, not even 1Password can into my stuff, because that's the cipher. And yeah. So I logged into SpiderOak.
Not having 1Password on a computer is just a non-starter. Yeah.
It is a non-starter. But I didn't have my cipher, so even then I would not have been able to get into my account, period. You know? It's like, I know my 1Password, obviously, but I didn't have the recovery
account key,
the master
key. They call it, yeah,
my account key. I didn't have it. I was like, oh no. Because they give it to you in a PDF and you're supposed to print it, which I was like, who wants a printer anymore?
I actually keep that all that info for my 1Password account in 1Password, which, I mean, obviously if I were locked out of all of my devices at once, that would not work out super well. But if I get a new computer, I'm going to have my phone.
Yeah.
So I would have to lose access to a lot of things and lose a lot of backups before I didn't have access to that anymore.
I didn't think about the phone option. I'm going to do that. But I think it was kind of a perfect storm because I had just formatted the MacBook because I sold that.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, I wonder if I have the recovery sheet. And I looked in the place where I keep it and I was like, uh-oh, it's not there. And so in a last-ditch effort, I logged into SpiderOak and I noticed I still had the backup there. And so I went into where I keep it and it was there. So I got it that way, which thank goodness that was there, because again, I didn't think for some reason, I'm going to do that as soon as we hang up, but I didn't think for some reason to put my cipher key in 1Password, because then I would have it on my phone. So it was by the skin of my teeth, I kept all of my password data.
I wonder what happens. Can you recover a 1Password account key? I should look this up. I should know this.
That's a very good question, because I mean, I would think that they wouldn't have it. I would hope that they wouldn't have.
I wouldn't imagine that they would have it.
They'd probably be like, you knew the rules when you signed up. You knew the risks involved.
Thanks again to the folks at SwiftType for their support of Does Not Compute. Search can be really hard, but it turns out search can also be really easy. Just enter your site address and SwiftType will index it, creating your own custom search engine. If you want blazing fast, incredibly easy search, check out SwiftType today by visiting swifttype.com/doesnotcompute. When you sign up, you'll get a free 14-day trial.